Welcome to Indie Riot Radio.
And this shit starts now.
Welcome to Indie Riot's Meet the Bands podcast. For our first band, we have Catalina Kicks from the UK. And thank you to Charlie Cooper from Indie Riot UK for the interview. But first, I'm going to leave you with C-Bomb.
Got a house in the country and a place in the city. Slip off a lip, boy, you're looking so pretty in love. Oh, babe. Got no reservation, you're so out of style. With self-fascination, your head's not so wild. But don't you get away, 'cause you don't care.
When did the band start?
I think we started about 2008. So Ian and I have been sort of writing stuff together and playing in various other sort of incarnations of Catalina Kicks for about 3 years now.
So you guys have been the kind of backbone of the band, the kind of original members, and you swapped around with other people?
Sort of, really, yeah. It's kind of a weird, long, drawn-out story, isn't it? But, where do you start?
We've had drummer woes.
Drummer woes and guitarist woes and, so it's just kind of gone from
there. Yeah, it's kind of almost, in a way, it's almost like it's a rite of passage of becoming a rock band, isn't it? Like, I'm looking for about two drummers and three guitarists in my own band.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's great. So when I hear the Catalina Kicks music, the first band that came to mind of kind of who your influences were was people like the Ramones and kind of like the punk bands, leaning more towards the kind of New York heavier punk than, say, the likes of the Stranglers and the Jam that we've got here in the UK. Are there any other influences from other genres that we might not expect you to have said that you would have taken from?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of... I mean, the first album was quite... I mean, it's quite tame, isn't it?
Yeah.
Compared to... We're starting to go towards a bit... getting a bit kind of nastier and dirtier kind of thing, but I suppose we always kind of wanted to go towards the kind of... Yeah, think of the Clash and the Kinks... And that kind of punk sort of stuff, and then mix it up with a bit of sort of American-y kind of thing, like you say, Ramones, Nirvana, Smashing Pumpkins, Queens of Stone Age, that kind of thing, and sort of really kind of build it into that thing. But yeah,
I suppose we like those kind of powerful type choruses, but I suppose British punk is kind of where our roots are. And we're all mad Nirvana fans and Clash and. I'm huge into the Misfits and Danzig, so I'm into kind of heavier stuff as well, and Queens of Stone Age. So, yeah, I don't know, we've all kind of got different influences, but we kind of, Ian and I seem to meld quite well together in what we come up with collectively and write, and it seems to work well, so it's good fun, yeah. I'd like to be loud, so as long as it's kind of
really loud.
Yeah, ear blistering, we're happy.
That's great. My favourite song that I've been wanting to listen to on your SoundCloud has got to be the Sea Bomb.
Okay, cool.
That was just for me. That I just loved everything about it.
Cool, man. Thanks.
When you're writing your songs, how does it work? Do you, Ian, kind of write sort of like 70% of the song and bring it in for the others? Do you write all the songs, or do you all write together?
I mean, pretty much we write together. Well, me and you bounce ideas off each other.
I mean,
Sea Bomb came out of a riff that Jay fired over to me, the bass riff, which was much slower originally, and it was like doo 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 doo, and it was quite kind of like bluesy kind of stuff, and then we just sort of sped it up to about 200 beats a minute, and just smashed it. I came up with a chorus with it. So I mean, usually Jay would come up with either, you know, a really cool riff or something like that, and that's how we kind of bounce ideas off each other really, and then I'll take it away, mess around with it, take it to rehearsal, and
vocally we had some ideas sort of for that, which Ian kind of built on a wee bit, but it was, wasn't it?
It was like you'd written one song that was with different chords over it.
Yeah,
about some, we can't really say who it's about because we might get sued. But you'd written that, and I thought that was really good, and then I kind of incorporated that into the hook and the bass riff that Jay had been doing. Then I got a chorus, and it kind of kicked off.
The guitar solo on that song is incredible, though. Like our guitarist of this, Von Muller. Is an absolute freak as far as guitar playing goes. Practices 10 hours a day and the rest of it's never really done anything but play guitar his whole life. And I remember watching him lay that down in the studio, and I thought it was kind of fairly brilliant, and it turned out quite nice. He's a cool guy to work with.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's the kind of direction we're going. That's from now. I mean, Sea Bomb's kind of the standard tempo of all the second album, really, isn't it? It's kind of all going like that. It's gone a bit all faster, a bit pacey, a bit dirtier and
raucous.
Yeah. So
that's great. Mm. And might sound like a bit of a cliche question that you will hear on like the stories about, but what inspired you guys to get the band together?
I don't know. Really, it was kind of. For me, I'd just come out of a band and we toured and we did loads of stuff and we had the deal and that kind of stuff and promised the world, and it all went to shit. So, and then I was kind of just in 2 years of just doing nothing really, and just kind of at the point of kind of giving up. And then a mate of mine said, "Oh, do you want the pants of doing something?" And I said, "Well, if you set everything up, then I'll be up for it." And that kind of came into this band really, and it's one of those things. I suppose. I can't really get rid of music. It's like one of those things that keeps on coming back, and it's just every time you think something's not going right or it's going to shit, then something else comes back to say, "Oh, do this." And you know, off the back of doing bits and pieces, then someone would phone up, and the publisher phoned us out of the blue one day, my old publisher, and said, "Do you want a deal?" And we're like, "Where did that come from?" And it's just like, it's just weird. It's one of these things you can't. I don't know. Inspiration's itself, I suppose, isn't it?
I think we both consciously decided that we wanted to strip back the sound originally to something a bit more raw and kind of real. So I suppose kind of trying to create some quality music that people who are into decent music and with some substance will enjoy, hopefully. That's really all. I suppose it's motivation enough. And it's nice when you can start seeing the results. Yeah. You're working with good producers and that kind of stuff. It's very warming to see.
And it's quite cool in the sense that we don't really pay any attention to what anyone's doing at the moment. So, I mean, you can see all this sort of scene out there and stuff that in British music, and we just do our own thing, don't we, really?
Yeah.
Tread our own path, and it's better than, we don't get involved with all the kind of chart crap and stuff like that. It's just like this, and it's cool. We just hook up with a few bands that we kind of know and stuff and do bits and pieces and just go for that, really.
The British music industry at the moment is seeing a lot of problems, not just in a business sense, but in a lot of people's opinion artistically. So you've got EMI just been sold to Universal, making it about... It was hard already for bands to get record deals from a major. Now it's going to be even harder in the UK. But on the artistic levels, what do you think the main problems are as far as the songwriting goes? Why do you think there are people like Scouting for Girls, for example, who are overproduced and having all of these kind of hits, and yet real bands who are just in it, rehearsing every night of the week and getting it like you guys and working as hard as they can, are still finding it hard to break into that scene? Why do you think at the moment, for example, what I mean is being in the charts is considered being a bad thing from an artistic point of view?
What do you think? Why do you think that is?
I think the majority of people in the UK or sort of worldwide are spoon-fed whatever whatever they're told is decent music. If you look at all the chart stuff, they can't make their own mind up, perhaps. Yeah. So whatever they're told is popular, they'll go out and buy. And if you've got enough money to do a huge marketing campaigns, you're told that listen to this. This is what's happening now. Unfortunately, a lot of people will swallow it without even sort of really listening and thinking whether they can relate to the music or it says anything more to them than sort of superficial rubbish. That's probably the pessimistic answer to that. But I wouldn't have it any other way. I'd rather be in a band that's appreciated by a few people that is making decent music than sort of selling out and chasing the dollar and kind of.
Yeah, that's great.
I can't say much more about that. I mean, the UK music scene's just shit, basically, isn't it? I mean, it's like America's a bit better because they got a bit more focus on bands, and so that's why we're planning on sort of going over to America and doing some stuff. And it's more a focus on music and what it is rather than just
it doesn't
sell. Yeah, but no, it's good.
From what I've heard from the guys over at Indie Riot Puerto Rico and North Carolina, it's that British bands are very popular in America simply because of the fact them being British and them all these massive bands come out bringing that England being big over there, like Blur and Oasis and like Lost Prophets coming from Wales and all the British scene. Do you think that will give you guys an edge out there as well?
I'm not sure really. I mean, hopefully we just go out and do our thing, I suppose. I mean, I've been out to the States before, and the audiences are generally, I think they're just more receptive for live music as well. It's like in Germany and Europe as well. I don't know. Well, it's just weird in London. There's just a saturation of bands and around the UK, and we toured around the UK, and we played some good places. They're receptive people, but it was just weird. The number of people that go out and see live music is so much less than it is somewhere in Canada, in the States, in Puerto Rico, in anywhere that seems to be more of a passion for live music over there, which is, and hopefully will give us hopefully the music will give us an edge rather than being English. But I mean, if you can jump off that kind of thing, it's.
I think live, we can always put on a really good show and sound real and heavy and sort of loud, and people should enjoy that. So. Yeah, but if it came out of the music, it would be easy. But unfortunately, there's a lot more sort of involved in success.
But my pet hate is put this in. My pet hate is British bands that sound American because I can't fucking stand them. It's just like the number of times you play a gig, and you've probably experienced it as well. And you're doing what you're playing, and you're playing with a band that wants to be, and they're just like ripping off an American band. And you think, why can't you? You've got British heritage and stuff, and it's just annoys me. But
being a bit more, I often was in class with a lot of Linkin Park wannabes people like Carl. I can remember once having a conversation with a guy saying, I really want to be in a band that's like kind of trance and kind of rap, but like screamo as well. And I was like, oh, so like a little bit like Linkin Park then. Yeah. And they're like, oh, no, nothing like that. But a little, I was like, no, it's exactly what you just said. But yeah, I know exactly what you're saying. One of the other questions I've got for you guys is when you see the genres of music going on in the UK, other than your own kind of like punk sort of. Matchday Fresh kind of backgrounds. I don't want to offend anyone. If I borrow your rap, Brett, not no. What other genres do you see successful in the UK that may have jumped over for America? Like examples of kind of like just something like Linkin Park sort of thing.
Yeah.
Other examples of sort of UK bands. You don't have to name anyone, but bands you've seen who have got that kind of thing. Like an example for us.
In the UK, it's a difficult one. Being successful in the States. It's usually quite weird. It's usually the opposite way around, isn't it? Bands like kind of you were saying Death From Above and stuff like that, they've got a British kind of sound and they come over and then they get big in Britain and then they go back to America and they get big over there. So
I don't know. John Peel did a lot for bands like that.
Yeah, but there's
and, it's weird, man. It's sort of sometimes UK will be more receptive to American stuff, and hopefully vice versa. But I don't know, man. At the moment, like in North London, especially kind of 60s soul and its mod kind of scene seems to be coming back as far as DJs. There's a few bands doing that kind of thing, which is kind of cool. Bass heavy sort of stuff, so I enjoy that. But I don't know, we'll wait and see. Maybe there's going to be a grunge resurgence, seeing as everything seems to work in a 20-year cycle. And kind of.
Well, they're saying the 90s is coming back, so...
Yeah, so we've positioned ourselves
well. That was strategic, wasn't it?
No, it wasn't. Kind of 60s meets 90s, well, 70s meets 90s, isn't it, really? So it's like kind of...
It's funny, I see, like, girls going into Top Shop and coming out with oversized baggy Nirvana t-shirts. I think, what would Cobain, you know, he'd probably laugh, I think, in his grave. Seeing Top Shop making money out of his band with the fashionable girls who've never sort of... listen to In Utero or whatever.
Yeah, we're born then. Yeah.
They know it smells like Teen Spirit, and that's about it,
I'll shag them anyway.
Good man. That's interesting what you said about that, because I've seen more Smiths t-shirts recently than I've seen in any. So I'm a diehard Smiths fan, so I haven't got any problem with that. I'm actually going to interview a band on Saturday called Chemical Smile, who've got that kind of, you know, if you've heard of those guys, a Brighton band.
Spell,
yes. Yeah, they're opening for a mixed album 19 audio.
Okay.
That's something really looking forward to that one. Cool. But as far as. You guys, when you kind of first sort of started out on the gigging circuit, how long did it take for you to stop playing established venues, get out of your kind of small bars and we'll play for 50 quid, you know, and that kind of thing, we'll play for nothing, there's a lot of, to making your album and getting out and getting interest in other countries, how did that all come about?
We just had to make it happen, really, ourselves. Unfortunately, we've found in London there's a lot of promoters out there who really don't give a shit about music and more into putting pressure on bands to get as many people through the door as possible, which isn't terribly nice to deal with. So at the moment, we're kind of pulling back from that and trying to play as many sort of free gigs or gigs that don't cost people any money to go and see as possible, and people can just enjoy themselves. But as far as getting everything happen, it was kind of a decision between Ian and I to do it, and it's that punk kind of DIY ethos, I suppose, coming through.
Yeah.
If you want it bad enough and you're willing to sacrifice things, you can make it happen. So.
Yeah. I guess it's kind of contacts we've kind of had in the past, or it's the kind of way, I suppose, you've got to, in a sense, you've got to have a bit of it, not really a business side, but you've got to push yourself out for everything. Yeah. And I suppose the stuff from the US has sort of come about through doing something called Sonic Bids, and we just literally... You subscribe to it. I was pretty anti it to start with, and I thought you got to pay to submit to all these things and stuff. But off the back of that, we've had some good things. We got accepted we got onto a charts for an American thing, and then we met a PR agency over in the States as well. So, and we've just been accepted for a Canadian music festival over there, and we're sort of basing a tour over someone we've met from there. So, I mean, that's kind of a good way of networking. I mean, you kind of pay for it, but it's not that massively expensive. It's the same sort of thing as having a manager, I suppose, but I've always been shy of having a manager because they screw you. It's weird, like you were saying, we just sort of got off and just did it, and I think from just playing, we got a couple of big gigs and stuff. We started off just literally starting back. I mean, you've got to play every toilet circuit venue in London and just play, and then we got, I mean, Coco was a big one, wasn't it? But we got that from literally playing in a shitty bar opposite Coco, and the promoter from Coco came to see us on a night that everything was wrong, all the equipment fell over, and they smashed the stage up, there were no drums, and it was just the worst thing ever. And then this guy said, oh yeah, I'm the Coco promoter and stuff, and I loved it, and we got off, phoned up and got a massive NME gig off the back of that, and that was totally different, because you just like literally get into this massive venue and they're looking after you and paying you good money and playing in front of 2,000 people, and it's just mental. But and then we just set a tour up ourselves, just got on, literally hired a van and set some venues up, went around the UK, and it's, I suppose, it's more you put in, the more you get out, in a sense. But then, I mean, we've had some kind of, originally we hooked up with a couple of producer and publisher, sort of let us use their studio for a bit, and we did a bit of stuff there. So it's kind of, it's sort of meeting people and finding out what's what, really.
Earlier on, we touched on kind of the British audience has been a bit renowned for being spoon-fed, listening to what they're told, good, not like narrow-minded up. Yeah. In that case, we touched on NME just then. In that case, how important do you think people like NME, Q and Mojo are at the moment, considering that people aren't making up their own minds, but so they're not trying to find out bands themselves by looking at these articles? Yeah. Do you think that's going to have a major effect on them, or do you think they're still an important presence in the music industry?
I mean, generally, marketing is everything, and PR and stuff, and we found that from going to PR companies, we use different PR firms and stuff, and the more you kind of pay, or the bigger PR agency, you're going to get exposure. So, I mean, a lot of magazines, in a sense, I'd like to say that music magazines are sort of promoting stuff, but they're basically being... In a sense, I mean, you know, you pay for advertising and something, and you get, or you pay for a front page feature, you pay for this kind of stuff anyway. So, the bigger bands, you know, you see the vaccines and stuff like that, and the stuff they're doing, their label or their manager. I mean, I'm not dissing their music, but their PR and their advertising is going to get them more features in anything. So, I don't know. I'm sure there are. I'm not being cynical, but I'm sure there are. A lot of journalists out there that want to write about and do discover new acts and stuff, but it's kind of
seems to be dwindling. It seems to be losing the fight, perhaps. But,
yeah, but not that we should really slag
that's
off
cool.
the magazines that. But I mean, it's odd. I mean, you've got to get the PR coverage. I mean, that's the way the music business works, I suppose, isn't it? You've got to have, I mean, record label would set you up, you'd market you, they'd PR you, and so it's, but I suppose you'd like to think that if a band was good enough, then they'd get discovered one way or the other, and they'd get written about through having no one, but it's, I think these days there's such a saturation of bands, it'd be difficult to, unless you actually push yourselves out there and you've got one person in the magazine that you might know, or someone or hears you and thinks they'll champion you. But you can never. But then, even that, it's like you've got. They'll have to get past their editor, and they've got to do this and stuff. So, but you like to think. I mean, be positive and stuff, and think that the good will out. But you never know.
So if you got one extreme to the other, you get bands who go for 10 years without even getting a decent gig, and then Tom Clark starts the NME and he's got a top 10 album a year later. It's so swings and roundabouts out there. Something we're trying to, in a small way, do something about indie, right? With your gigs, this is kind of more a question for the musicians, and more something I'm interested in myself here. What kind of equipment do you guys use as far as instruments and amps and stuff go?
I think we're both into the more kind of classic stuff. I've got a 77 Rickenbacker bass, which is the only kind of... Well, it was the bass I always wanted. Never thought I'd be able to have, but...
I've got a 330.
Oh, yeah.
I think as far as our sound goes we
don't want to overcomplicate things with tons of pedals and effects and stuff like that.
I noticed that you guys use a lot of overdrive and stuff like that, but that's about kind of it. I didn't really notice much wah or delay or things like that. Was that deliberate?
Kind of. I think it was just more of a fact we couldn't be asked to carry loads of gear around. I never play with any pedals. I mean, I've just started playing. I bought a Meza preamp, and that's wild.
It's not the Boogie V-Twin, is it?
What's that?
It's not the Boogie V-Twin, is it?
Yeah.
That's what I've got.
Yeah.
How good is that? It's wild. It turns a 5-watt amp into a 26-watt amp or something.
You've got to control it. It's like going from driving a Mini to a Porsche. Oh. And it's like, and it's meant to, I mean, they're great.
I haven't gigged with it yet.
Yeah. You haven't? Or
no,
you,
no, I haven't. No,
oh, you wait.
I'm getting it lent to me for a year. A friend of mine's got his move to Spain for a year. Yeah. It's like, if you like it, you can get it.
Yeah, they're kind of coming to collector's items these days. But yeah, I mean, I use that, and I use a Tele. Well, it's Jay's Telly, actually. I used to use a Strat when it was a bit too nice, wasn't it? But now the Telly's kind of give it that sound. It's got some extra... What humbuck is it?
The Detroit pickup, apparently. I bought it off eBay.
Like a humbucker and a single coil, or was it a double humbucker?
Single humbucker. It's been beefed up. It's got a really nice kind of ballsy, sort of bluesy
really
sound.
Crunchy,
so it works well with what we're doing.
It screams.
But yeah, amp-wise, I tend to turn the gain up to max and then try to get a little bit of kind of distortion happening. But I think I'm going to be buying a Sans amp bass driver pretty shortly. Scraping my pennies together to get some sort of... I think they're all analog, so you get a nice warm fuzz without losing any bottom end, which I think is quite important for bass.
I had that for myself actually once with a bit more distortion. We were doing Sam Mendes or a ska punk version of Song 2 by Blur, and we had for the overdrive bit. Bass player bought his guitar overdrive pedal. It was they're like, where's the bass gone? it was a good crack though. We had a good laugh in that audition. But as far as your kind of sound goes, I noticed your drummer's not here tonight. Is that she can make it or just went?
Yeah, he's a drum teacher, so yeah.
What's his name?
James.
So kind of what stylistically? How is much as sort of James brings to the table as far as that, you know, when you're what uniqueness does he bring to the record? It'd be quite hard for a drummer to differentiate from another drummer. Like, you know, a lot of people think that you could just put any drummer in any band and he could do it, which isn't the case. What makes him perfect for the Catalina Kicks?
I guess when we were auditioning drummers, because we've been through a few, it's sort of like Spinal Tap.
Yeah.
They just keep spontaneously combusting. Yeah. But I guess initially we want someone who can play, obviously, and play sort of fairly heavy hitting. And James could do that fairly well. He nailed sort of the audition tracks and he was hitting really hard. And you can tell that he just owned the songs and kind of directed us, which is nice. So yeah, we're not really interested in mega...
Technical.
Well, I mean, a bit of technical fills and overcomplicating songs. We'd rather keep it sort of heavy, John Bonham-esque. He's into Dave Grohl and Bonham and those kind of classic heavy hitting, you know, decent drummers, decent, brilliant drummers. And he's working out really well.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, he's the one person who we auditioned. Because we came, we had different styles of drummers. We had people that are just like kind of very rigid and.
And
he's just like kind of dang. And then I mean that's when we were starting up really, and then we sort of got in more into. We had the last drummer was a bit more kind of he hit the kind of wild mark and stuff like that, but it just didn't really work out. But then I mean James just came in and he sort of like you said nailed everything, and he's kind of loose with being tight at the same time, so you kind of know where you are, and it sort of holds it together. But there's a bit of kind of madness. You've got to have that kind of edge of madness that you never know what's going to kind of happen, sort of, which is quite good.
So basically, it's the complete opposite of the Foles' drummer.
Yeah.
Right. you get a lot of bands who I feel, my opinion, you do make things too technical. And I personally think the Foles have got a very good sound, but fuck being in that band is too much like hard work. You know, it's like
math rock.
It takes the enjoyment. Well, for us, I mean, doing the kind of stuff we're doing, it takes the enjoyment out, wouldn't it? I mean, if you played everything to a click.
Yeah.
I mean, you record, we still play to a click, but we kind of stray from time to time. And, I mean, the drummer is, he's good enough to sort of hit that click if he wants to do it, but at the same time, it keeps it loose. So,
as long as we're having a good time. Yeah. And I suppose being in a band is more about how you're relating with the other band members as well.
Yeah.
More so than ability. I mean, if you can play and you get on well and you're on the same wavelength, it can probably happen.
Yeah.
And you get to practice on time and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, that's another pet hate of mine. Is that bands you see and they're just perfect, and you think kind of as in of sort of playing. I mean, it's just really rigid. It's perfect, but there's no emotion, there's no passion and stuff in it. And rather than they just sort of sit there, they do a good performance, and it's like. It's played to a click or whatever like that, and it's just spot on. And it's good, it's absolutely spot on. But the kind of stuff we're doing is just not. And a mistake with us would be better than doing something that wasn't.
With stuff like this, far I've got with drummers and kind of like the rawness of bands. I mean, one of my favourite examples of a band like is Joy Division. I'm a Joy Division fan.
Yeah.
It's kind of like when Ian Kirsten went to New Order, they were doing good songs, but you got that. It's just like, that's not a drum kit. You know, I know I thought on that one. We've been going for like half an hour now. It's gone quickly, hasn't it? That's why I just don't want to get too much info for the magazine.
Yes, please.
I've got two more questions. One being, where are the next steps for you guys? After you've got this tour sorted out, where do you want to take it after that?
Question. I guess we'd like to be picked up on a label like Sub Pop or someone who I think has a pulse and still cares about their acts and is interested in decent music and getting that onto the unwilling public. Yeah, I mean, to be able to do this full time and sort of concentrate and throw all our energy at it, I think we could do some really good stuff.
It's great.
Yeah.
Do you want to add to that?
Really, well, I kind of live in, I don't know what I live in really, I live in my own world, but yeah, no, it'd be good. I mean, it'd be great to, and we're doing everything ourselves at the moment, so it'd be good to get some people behind us that kind of, that just believe in where we're going, and a good label that believe more kind of, yeah, artistically and creatively that what we're doing, and I'm not after world domination, are we? We're just like, want to write some songs.
Party hard, yeah.
It's really refreshing to meet a band who do care about the music and not going out there and driving a Ferrari and then with 30 odd guitars, you know. It's great to meet that. I mean, the help I've got some great guitars, but actually they were given to me by people who have kind of been there, done it, like, I don't need it anymore. Yeah. I'll be in a very low position. The stuff I've got, I don't actually say anymore, yeah, I've got this and that, because like, if I weren't in that position, I wouldn't be able to afford to get it.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, wow, you're so really a band, you got Rickenbacker. I'm like, no.
Literally, yeah.
Yeah.
It's too easy. Everyone's going to be doing it. It's not going to mean anything to you. So, I mean, we don't mind suffering a bit. We're used to it.
No, that feeling. I've got another question. This is going to be the last question, and we can turn this off and just talk about music anyway. Basically, if you don't want this to be printed because of any issues, you think you get legal, which I don't think you would have an opinion, you're a favourite band from each of you, and my band you absolutely despise from each of you.
I'll need to think about the despising one while Ian tells you his favourite one, but my favourite band, I think, ever would probably be the Misfits. Danzig is an absolute machine. I've seen him live before, and it was like I was rock hard all gig. They just completely didn't give a shit about anything other than getting their stuff out there, and they made like absolutely brilliant kind of punk rock songs. He's just badass. He's a man.
And your favourite?
I'm kind of torn. I mean, Nirvana changed my life. Not the necessary Nevermind, but it was the earlier kind of stuff. But I don't know if favourite band was. I mean, I just like loads of different bands, and I get loads of different things from different things. I mean, remember hearing like the Troggs and the Kinks and that stuff. I mean, the first song I ever got given, my old man gave me like Wild Thing on a 70, and I was like, yeah, this is a fucking good first song to earn. And I was like, yeah, this is cool. But I mean, I kind of love that kind of thing. I mean, the Kinks, I love the Stones, I love, you know, the Pixies, Queens of the Stone Age, Nirvana. I don't think I've got one favourite. I love the early Chili's kind of stuff, but I mean, that's more funky kind of stuff. But I mean,
Stadium Arcade is crap.
Yeah.
Mm. What was that? You had that new one with you?
I saw them on Jules Holland the other night.
Yeah, it's got like two good songs on it.
It's a shame because it's like a brilliant band.
Brilliant band.
Everyone could agree. Cool. But,
and I was like, because that, by the way, I thought it was a great album. And I was like, this is brilliant. Even Stadium Arcade had like two or three good songs on it, but then they did two decent.
Now they're kind of tarnishing everything they've done before, which is a shame to see.
I honestly thought getting a new guitar, I was just going to freshen them up and get a bit less stale. Unfortunate.
No, it's weird. But I think my least favourite would probably have to be anything that comes out of the X Factor or like the Justin Bieber type thing. More so, not that I've actually listened to this stuff that intently, unfortunately. The part when he gets his head squished.
Hilarious. They send that to our monster. Yeah. Yeah, he just killed Justin Bieber and all his fans. Yes. We will continue to do more good work like this.
The Jonas Brothers who proudly proclaimed that they were going to be virgins.
Yeah, why would you?
Until they get married, I thought it's not really
every
rock and roll.
Every 14-year-old spends that whole 2 years lying about being alone. Why would
we? Going home and wanking 10 times a day. No. Whatever, man. Anything that's just doing it for the money and isn't interested in actually what they're putting out there.
Yeah.
I can't think of a kind of... I don't hate generally. I'm not a hater, but... I don't know, really. I mean, it's like, as much as I... Yeah, there's things I don't really like, but I don't really... I don't know.
It's nice, I mean, we've got the choice. If we don't like something, we're not going to listen to it.
Yeah, exactly.
But it doesn't really bother me until I'm at work and in the lunchroom and they're playing... Top 40 on the big screen they've got up there, which is a bit annoying, but it reminds me of how lucky I am to appreciate.
I remember watching MTV the other day, and I was like, I tweeted, I thought, for the first time in a while, and I was just like, this is happening? What the fuck is going on?
It's even Absolute Radio, and like, they do play some really good tunes. I think it's the best station out there. Occasionally, you hear something, and it's just like, what are you doing, like, Abracadabra or something? You just played that after Jimi Hendrix tune. What are you doing?
It's weird.
But they played me on. Was that Absolute?
Absolutely got played.
Yeah, we got a bit of play on them a while ago.
So oh, did you?
So we're quite happy with that.
That's quite good, yeah.
I can't work and get you another one. I've got to work some contacts in the radio, so I'll see what I can do.
Great,
and that's pretty much everything for the sort of formal interview side of it, basically. Okay, guys, so back here with the Catalog Clicks. Just come out when we were having a drink. Played a 100 Club gig, and it went slightly wrong. So do you mind telling us what happened with that?
I wouldn't say it went wrong. I would say it went quite right. And to be honest, the 100 Club was the birthplace of the punk scene in London, so they shouldn't have gotten so upset that we maybe smashed the stage up a wee bit. The problem, I think, initially was they didn't give us any free beer tokens, so we had to buy a big fuck-off bottle of cheap vodka, which we were necking out the back between three of us. Our guitarist doesn't drink, so we were quite lubricated by the time we went on stage. And then...
It was our last song, and I kind of leant into the drums, and the drummer smacked me on the head. He kicked it. The old drummer had a habit of smashing his kit up. It was his kit, which is fine. It was okay. But he smashed his kit up, and he hit me, and I kind of pulled him through his kit because I was quite drunk.
And the speaker stack
might have got pushed over, and then we kind of... It was quite weird because off the back of that, we got offered a deal. There's one of these things, this record guy came up and said, "Oh, guy, you guys are amazing," kind of shit. But and then I got hauled out the back and got threatened to beat the crap out of me by a bouncer. It was like a proper old school sort of thing.
Yeah.
They dragged me out the back and said, this is how we deal with that kind of shit. And I was like, what kind of shit? And we'll pay for a difference. It didn't really matter.
It was our equipment anyway, so it didn't really matter.
But it was kind of... And then they said, you're not coming back here in the long future. And so I was like, yeah, fine, whatever.
It's now anyway.
Yeah, so precisely, yeah.
What about my head about that thing on the 100 Club closing is you had people like Weller and McCartney.
Well, it's still open though. It's
still, I thought it was closing down, isn't it?
No.
I think it was an elaborate...
It was spoken to get...
That's weird, because I heard it's closing down next year.
Oh, really?
That's what I heard. I got that wrong.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
No, because I mean, it was this time last year that we played it, and it was supposed to be closing down. And then we played a gig probably... It was the middle of this year, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Then we've obviously not gone back since, but I know it's still going. But I think they want sponsorship and all that kind of stuff, and I think it got a sponsor, but I'm not sure.
It's really weird because from the outside it just looks like corporate Oxford Street.
Yeah.
You go down there and it's got all this kind of history and heritage behind it.
Yeah.
Kind of like Carnaby Street.
Yeah.
Nowadays it looks a bit kind of, you know, you got your bench and shop.
It's poncy, isn't it? I mean, they should embrace a band actually showing some emotion and doing something on stage, especially when no one's getting injured and you're not trashing into their own shit.
Yeah.
But I got a bit carried away.
I admit it.
It was my own fault.
Rock and roll.
And that's the end of Charlie's interview with the band Catalina Kicks. Don't forget to look them up on Reverb Nation, Facebook, Twitter, Google them, and just follow them and tell them that you heard them on Indie Riot Radio. And while you're at it, how about adding us too? Now, before we leave, I'm going to leave you with one more song from Catalina Kicks, and this is called 145.
Why don't you say?